Welcome to the University of the Free State Career Services podcast, where we talk to experts about the ins and outs of jobs and share tips that will give you a grip on your future career.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Matt Cronier here for the UFS Career Services podcast. And today, I had the privilege of speaking to Diego Rex. Diego is currently employed as a transitional academic advisor at CTL, where he's previously worked as a lecturer and an intern psychologist in the Department of Psychology. And at the moment, he is hoping to write and pass his national board exams with distinction, which will allow him to register and practice as a licensed counseling psychologist. He's also hoping to complete his PhD in research psychology within the next 2 to 3 years. And with that, become the first honors, master's, and doctorate holder in his family. So as the firstborn of 5 siblings, it has always been a recurrent theme for him and pattern in his life to pioneer new ways and to lead others. So Diego, welcome to the podcast. Oh,
thank you very much, Dr. Crinney, if I can call you that.
Sure. Awesome. So Diego, obviously, you know, we're here to sort of chat about your career, to chat about your journey. I've had a read through your bio, quite an interesting journey you've had indeed.
Yeah.
So we're going to unpack that a little bit. But before we get into that, could you tell us about the best day in your career so far?
I think, to be honest, the best day in my – I've actually had quite a lot of them. But I think the very best day that really stands out was back in 2020. This was obviously wasn't the best year for many people, myself included.
Yeah.
But, it was 2020. I was in my honors and I was in the process of applying for masters. Mm. So I had to write an autobiographical essay about myself, which I did. I sent in the application forms. The best day was actually my birthday, which is on the 11th of September. Mm-hmm. And my interview for the master's program was on the 10th. Of September, which was actually the day before.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know why it's like that. It's quite paradoxical that sometimes your best interviews are the ones that feel like the worst. Mm-hmm. So it really felt like a blundered interview. I didn't even want to talk to anyone about it afterwards, you know. And then the day after, I got a phone call from Mr. Taylor from the psychology department saying, congratulations, you were accepted into the master's program. So I think for me, on many levels, on a personal level, on an academic level, it was the best day because the selection program is very strict. Mm. I think they select here at the UFS, they select 12. And if you think of the numbers of students before that, cumulatively, it's over thousands. Mm. I know of people, some are colleagues who have tried applying and never got in year after year until they eventually got accepted. So I was really privileged and blessed to get in on the first try. And that was the best day of my career.
Amazing.
Academic career. It was also my birthday at the same time. So yeah. I would have this feelings of derealization, depersonalization. Like people would say, "Oh, congratulations for getting selected." And then, I would forget it's my birthday. And then when people say, "Oh, happy birthday," then I was like, "Oh, wait, it's my birthday." And it felt like I was floating in and out of my body. So it felt very surreal and unreal. But yes, that was the best day.
So you mentioned, obviously, as I mentioned now, you know, you've completed your honors, your master's as well, and you're currently busy with your doctorate. Could you tell us a little bit more about your master's journey? What did you focus on? What was your research on?
Mm-hmm. So I did a structured master's, which is a year theory, a year of classes, advanced classes, and then the second year is internship. So I did my first year here at the psychology department, and my internship, I did it also at UNIBS, which is right next to the psychology department. My research was a dissertation, which I wanted to look at specifically the mental health of university students during the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm-hmm. So my research was originally titled "The Role of Perceived Social Support in the Relationship Between Sense of Coherence and Psychological Well-being." And then I eventually amended the title, and then I looked at perceived social support and sense of coherence as predictors of psychological well-being of students during the pandemic. So I recently completed it, I think 29th of Feb, 26th of Feb. I had to make some minor adjustments, but yeah, that was what my research master's was based on.
Awesome. And is sort of student well-being something that you've always been interested in? How did you get onto that topic?
I think, yeah, student well-being was something that I really related to because I was also a student myself. And I wasn't really, I'm not really a believer of always going for the easiest topics or always going down paths that have been tread on by many others. So I wanted to look at something different. But yeah, student well-being is something that sits close to me because I was a student and I understand the complexities and the hardships that a student goes through. So I really wanted to see how is the occupation of being a student made infinitely more complex and difficult during a global pandemic.
Anything that sort of came out of that that you, as a transitional academic advisor, which we want to get into in a bit, but anything from your study that you actually use on your daily basis in your current position?
Yeah, absolutely. So not to get too technical, sense of coherence is a theory that was posited by Aaron Antonovsky. He was a medical sociologist in Israel, and how he came up with the term of sense of coherence in salutogenesis was he looked at, I think there were about 29 or 30 women who survived the Holocaust. And he asked the question, what is it that makes people well, even when they go through suffering, hardship and trauma? And he was quite perplexed by the idea that of the 30 women, I think it's 30, there were about three of them or four or five. He called this the deviant cases. Why is it that even though these individuals went through the same difficulties, why is it that they reported, subjectively reported doing so much better than everyone else? Lost a husband, lost an arm, maybe lost vision in one of their eyes, but psychologically they were flourishing. And that's what he really tried to grapple with. So in my study, there's three components of sense of coherence. There's comprehensibility, which just really speaks to how comprehensible is things that happen in your life around events. How well do you understand them? Can you make sense of them? The second one is manageability, which really refers to, do you have the resources or the means to manage these events that happen to you or that you're involved with? And the last one, which Antonovsky called the most important, was meaningfulness, which is how worth enduring are these events to you? So in my study, I found that meaningfulness was the most important predictor of student well-being during the pandemic. Simply translated, if you find that your studies is something that is meaningful to you, it is a powerful motivator for you to push on and carry on through whatever hardships there is. So I do believe it has a place in my current role. I do believe it even has a place in my profession as a counseling psychologist as well, that it brings this meaning to life and purpose element to it. Yeah.
Incredible. And I think, yeah, like it's something we so often hear about, our students, you know, struggling with these difficult situations, these potentially traumatic events. Obviously, COVID was a big one. But I think just in the day-to-day lives of so many of our students, they are facing these kinds of challenges. So it's great to hear that there's research being done in that space, and that we have people in-house who actually are experts on that topic and can actually work there. With that being said, your role as a transition academic advisor, what actually is that? What do you do? What does it entail?
It is actually a new role that has been generated within the division of CTL.
Okay.
So you have senior academic advisors, you have your central advisors, you have your faculty advisors, your curriculum advisors, and then you have the transition academic advisors. And what we do is we specifically focus on the individuals, the university students who are transitioning from the extended programs into mainstream. So we focus specifically on extended curriculum program students. And we do advising just as any of the other advisors do in terms of study skills, time management, motivating students, really, yeah, very similar role to what all the other academic advisors do, but we focus on a specific cohort of students.
Okay, and how do students actually get hold of you and sort of so that you can assist with that?
Mm. There are multiple ways, but the most common way that students tend to get hold of us is through the GPS hub, the graduate positioning system. So there's a call center at Career Services, and they proactively make calls to students that are flagged for or flagged at risk academically, and then they refer the students to us. So okay. We actually share the same building. It is the Modlec venue.
Okay.
Other times, students are referred to us through their faculties, their respective faculties. So on the Bloom campus, we are 7 transitional academic advisors. The South campus has 2, and then the Qua campus also has 2. So we are also we're allocated to specific faculties. So the faculties that I service are the education faculty and the theology and religion faculties. And those faculties then, we are the bridge between the students and the faculty and vice versa. So they refer the students to us as well. And then we also have a host of initiatives that we run, workshops, support programs. We do a lot of proactive engagements just to kind of see what the needs are with students and to get them to come for academic advising.
I was having a read through your bio, and you actually, your initial idea was to become a soccer player.
Yep.
That was the plan. Went to Brazil and everything.
Yes.
I was going to join a training academy there.
Yes.
And then unfortunately, injury struck. And then you had to make your way back to South Africa to figure things out. I would imagine that's quite a major setback, a major upset for an individual with big dreams like that.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, and I mean, again, this is something I think a lot of people can relate to, having these kinds of, you know, we've got these ideas of what we want to be one day, what we want to become, you know, how we're going to get there. And sometimes those plans don't always work out.
Yeah.
Speak us through a little bit about that process. How did you overcome? I would imagine it was quite disappointing. How did you then decide on psychology, and how did your studies then lead you to where you are today?
Mm-hmm. Just on a 4-point, it is something that I've had to deal with myself. Some would see it as a setback, some would see it as a blessing, and some would see it as a trauma. For me, it was all of the above.
Mm.
So just for the listeners, so I was named after Diego Armando Maradona, the Argentinian legend.
No pressure.
No, there was actually a lot of pressure. So growing up, that was my identity. That's what I would identify as. That's the first thing people would say about me or remember about me. Maradona, and so on. So I grew up with inculcating that as part of who I am. And I played sport, school level. I was actually very good, really good. And I had these dreams of pursuing it. So I wanted to pursue my dreams abroad. And then an agency got hold of me from Brazil. So before I went to Brazil, I was part of an exchange program with my school. And I went to Ecuador in Quito. And some way, somehow, I was also playing soccer there. And then my host family connected me with a resource that I used. And then I followed this link and this resource, and then I ended up with an agency in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So this knee injury, I got it in grade 11. So it was like street soccer. We'd play not actually on the street. It sounds harsh, but it wasn't actually on the street. It was on the park. And there was this hole where these sprinklers that are in the ground would come in and out of. Yeah. So it was covered by a lot of lengthy grass. We were playing, and then I was tackled and I fell on that hole, and my knee bent the other way, not the way the knee usually bends.
Sure.
So, and someone fell on top of me on top of that. And then I carried on playing, thinking it was just a sprain. Eventually, it became a major issue. So I had a torn meniscus. And then I went to Ecuador. I still carried on playing. And then, like I said, I followed this resource. In my matric year, I was unable to. I also played rugby at the time. I was also very good. I was playing as a left winger, number 11. I couldn't play any of the sports. I took up coaching in my matric year, coaching the younger guys. And then my plan was then to leave the country in 2015 and go and pursue soccer. But I couldn't pursue it immediately because of this injury. So the agency requested that I seek a second opinion in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And at the time, my parents couldn't afford the actual procedure here. I think at that time it was around 30,000. So we went to Brazil. I got to see the sites. I even got to see where I would be training, my potential home for the next couple of years. I really loved it. You know, it's a vibrant country. The culture just is something else. I stayed in a very nice apartment. Also cost quite a bit. So the currency from South African rands to reais is 1 rand is equal to, no, I think 1 reais is equal to 4 rand. So it was times four. Everything is times four. So, I got my surgery. By the grace of God, I went to one of the best hospitals, and it was covered by travel insurance. So my parents didn't have to pay a thing. And then I had to start the recovery process. And I was sitting there in my very expensive apartment thinking to myself, gosh, I cannot keep allowing my parents to cough up this much money for me to sit here. And the recovery would have taken at least 6 months because I've had the injury for almost a year. So I made the decision, okay, I'm going to come back to South Africa and I'm going to try and pursue soccer here and get a backup plan, because my dad would always talk about have a backup plan. An injury in sport, especially if you're a high-performing athlete, if you have no backup, then it can be very fatal in a financial sense. So that's when I came back. Came back a month after I left, and I didn't know what to choose to study. So my father and the teacher that I always, when I was a teenager, rebellious teenager, she would always tell me, you have potential. You've got the wrong group of friends. You're shooting yourself in the foot. And I would always think, oh, you know, she's just on my case and stuff. But I was quite immature then. And when I started to think about it, like, yo, let me follow this. They said that I've got this type of skills and abilities, and this is the type of person I could be. Let me try psychology. And I sat in my first class, and I loved it since then.
That's incredible. And I think it's such a good story in the sense of, you know, obviously numerous amounts of setbacks, a lot of personal pressure, a lot of family pressure. There's so many things that students can relate with. You mentioned, just interestingly, you know, your dad mentioning, you know, it's always good to have a backup plan. I think this is something a lot of parents tell their children. In hindsight, looking back, do you think, would you advise that students who maybe have interests in sports, or who have interests outside of the traditional academic context, that they still continue to study, to have that backup plan while they pursue their other goals?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because I think especially when it comes to things of a very volatile nature, such as sport, anything to do with your body, even things to do with your vocal cord, singing, or whatever I want to say, unconventional career that is, anything can happen at any moment, and you know, then it's tickets. So
obviously no job is perfect, and I think, as you mentioned, you know, you are studying to further your studies and to become a counseling psychologist. So your role at CTL at the moment is I would imagine one that's part of the bigger picture, but not the end goal necessarily for you. So where you are now, what are some of the downsides to your current position?
I think the downsides to this job for me personally, just like any other job, I mean, I was a student. I spent a heck load of time being very sedentary. And obviously, I still sit long periods of time. So it's very difficult to cut out time to be active and to do other things. And Yeah, I think that for me is the only downside, having to sit in an office all the time.
You'd rather be running out in front of thousands of
fans. They practice just, you know, I just have to take a few steps out of my office and look to the right, and there they are practicing or playing soccer opposite the next to the education faculty. And I think to myself, man, you know.
It would be great to go run around.
Yeah, it would be good. It would be good. It is called student engagement, so
exactly.
It's kind of under the job profile.
Nice. I like it. At the end of the conversations, I usually like to do a couple of quick fire questions. So first thing that comes to mind, you can respond.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, psychologists don't really take this very well.
Overthinking. Right, let's have a look. They're at least not too, I don't think, too invasive at least. So firstly, coffee or tea?
Tea.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Remote or on-site?
On-site.
Every
morning I pray.
And my favorite word is?
I have a lot of favorite words. I think my new favorite word is cacophonous.
Okay.
It sounds, has this nice sound of virtuosity, but it actually just means confusing noises and, you know, yeah. So I'm yet to use it in actual conversation.
Waiting for the opportunity.
Waiting for the opportunity.
Incredible. Awesome. So, Diego, that's all I've got for you. Yeah, I think as somebody who has clearly had an interesting journey in life and career-wise, had to make a couple of pivots, had to figure things out, had to overcome a few disappointments, and has also just managed to keep powering through. I think this was a great conversation. I think something that a lot of students can relate to. And here's to you completing that doctorate and holding true to that promise that you gave your grandmother, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
That's it for now. Listen to all our episodes to make sure that you get into the fast lane of career success.